All right, we are here for you. This is building and managing team breakout and any questions that you may have. So feel free to just start shooting in my way and we'll make the most of this time. Anyone have a question top of mind or they want to see something?
I had a question, Tiff, but I mean, I'm free to take it offline as well. But would love to hear a little more detail on how you all have restructured your comp plans, not in terms of how you like the numbers, but in terms of communicating to your teams, whether or not you saw people, like you went down in base salaries, kind of some of those scenarios.
So we never went down in base salaries. So, to be fair, I have had the experience once where we didn't have clear defined roles, or we thought we did, and it was lacking clarity, but at that point, we were still more hybrid, and advisors had responsibility to bring in business on top of being servicing advisors. We've totally shifted that to be fully centralized as a, like the firm is a marketing firm that brings in the clients and our advisors are servicing advisors. They don't have the role of lead gen. But in that moment, compensation was paid based on the study on advisors that brought in business. And we lacked that. And so this certain advisor at that time did not bring in any business and was being paid for that. So we actually decreased his comp based on that. And that ultimately was a fallout. People don't like their compensation being decreased. It was the right fallout for our firm. It needed to happen. However, it just didn't feel good for anybody. Like that was not a fun conversation for me to go and have. So the way in which we shifted our model from like that profit share and then the salary, to be very clear, we bring our team in and let them have a lot of voice and understand and buy into what we're doing. And so they shared, one of them was like, you know, do we, instead of doing 80% base and 20% salary, would you feel better if it was 100% salary? Would you feel better if it was 90 and 10? And 80 and 20 was actually the thing that made people feel the most comfortable. And it's super interesting because like, the financial advising side of us are like, no, take the 100% in base. Like a bonus. A bonus is always subjective. Like you always take the for sure thing, right? But people utilize their lifestyle on it. And we find actually the bonus supports us culturally and as a firm in a really big way, because people utilize that for their vacations or their holiday presents or these other things that are fulfilling in life. Where we're like, oh, they have those earmarked for things that are really big in their life, or it feels really good in those moments, and their base salary is their lifestyle. And so it's a natural thing to be aware of. It's like a level of bonusing ends up being important in my opinion, in that comp model. Interesting that our team chose it, but also really good that our team chose it, because I can see where that reward comes in on a quarterly basis with everybody. And again, we're not making it punitive. We've been down that road where it was like, we had three firm metrics, like profit margin, net new revenue, and I can't remember client retention. So like if it was above 97%, then they got a piece of the bonus. And if the profit margin was this or above, they got a piece of it. And then the team didn't like that because they're like, well, I'm not in control of some of that, or I can't control that decision. And then we were like, okay, great. We're going to add an individual component to that 20%, and 10 of that'll be based off of what you're doing in your position. But then it was like, well, my position sometimes is dependent on somebody else doing their stuff, and so I can't control that. They're like, that's just like not a fun conversation. Cause what we got to is like the compensation conversation should never be this icky conversation that doesn't make anyone feel good, especially with bonus. Like bonus is meant to make everyone feel good. And oftentimes bonuses, I don't know if you guys have experienced it, but they can make people feel bad. You're like, that isn't meant to make you feel bad. Variable comp could be, right? Like when you have a position, like when eventually we hire onboarding specialists, that'll be a position based off of new business close, because their job is to bring in new business and close it. So they will have a higher level of variable comp associated with that. But outside of that, it's a really solid, like we are really clear on the roles. And if you come every day and do it really well, we're going to get you to this 100% comp, with the exception of the only time that we ever on that 20% pulled back was in April of 2020. If I don't know if you remember, like March, it went down big time. We had that 20%. Now the markets recovered and we pushed that out on the back end of the year to the team. But in that moment, everybody was like, man, I feel really good about my job. And I totally understand why we're not getting paid the bonus at the moment. And as a firm, 20% off the top when compensation is a leading, you know, expense. I hate to say it. Compensation is a leading expense. I want to be very clear. Our people are assets, but compensation is a leading expense. When you can pull off that 20% to support the P&L, to support your team before feeling the pressure of pulling other levers first, it was really great. And then the incentive comp is something we just put in place as a firm this year, because we want to encourage growth across the firm. But as I mentioned, everybody gets to share into that. It is the largest number. I know. I try to be really sensitive to the fact, I don't know if anyone else in your positions have been told
that
you're an
expense. Largest number. Not expense.
It is the largest number. Right. It is the investment that makes things work, but it is the largest number. And so having some level of flexibility there is important. But what we learned is, like, it was fascinating when we're in a profit share that you have team members that are like, ooh, we don't want you to hire that lead strategist. I know we're working 120%. We're not happy in our roles, but if you hire that advisor, it means that if for a period of time that bonus goes down, because that means it's playing into profitability. And you're like, oh, that's a weird attachment. We don't want you to have that attachment. So what's going to be an encouraging compensation as a firm for that to show up? We don't do rev share models with the team as far as team management goes or anything like that. Like, we're strictly, our team members are employed, team members. They're not bringing in business. They're not doing those types of things. And so we feel like the partnership path to equity is quite that incentive to get there. But, you know, like, what we would see is, like, now that we have three teams, there could be friction in on, like, well, you're spending more marketing dollars over here. So of course that rev share with this team is going to be higher, or they had an easier target market, or those types of things. And we just don't want to create that competitiveness inside our firm. We want everyone to be excited about growth in general. So it's very, very important when you're thinking about compensation to think about what behaviors do you want to drive, both from a cultural and business perspective and an individual performance perspective. The rollout of it, you can refine it and talk to them about it. The incentive comp that we created, I showcased that. I actually did a one-to-one with everybody to, we talked about it high level as a firm, asked everyone to think about it, asked if they felt good about that compensation model. I did one-to-ones with everybody to say, hey, like, we're going to now officially roll this out. Here's what this could mean to you specifically in your role. And if you have any concerns, let us know. We're going to roll it out in the next 3 months. And then when it rolled out, we had full buy-in. And that was really great. There's a very fine line from giving voice and encouragement to taking all thoughts and putting them in place. Just remember that everybody is in a seat, that they may not have the lens to understand the effectiveness across the team. Also, they personally could have certain biases or personal things in their life that are coming up to why they would want it positioned in a certain way. So we have to lead that. But voice and buy-in was really big in all of these rollouts that we've done over the years. We've been on the comp model that we are now for about 3 years. And with the exception of the incentive comp that just became an added above that salary and bonus. And it's been going really, really well. It shows up well in hiring and onboarding, and it's been going well with the team. The one moment we had to take off that 20%, it was well received. And of course, we had the opportunity to put it back on later in the year because 2020 bounced back. But let's see. Other questions? Needs to make the jump from staffer to partner. Yeah, we have a couple of things there. We certainly need a level of growth with the firm. So there is an uncontrollable there. Like, we just want to see that we're in a place. We have four partners now, but three of this second generation, one of the partners received a partnership share prior to Jared and taking over the firm. They really have to be adding IP to the business. So like our chief investment officer, myself and Jared, like, we create a lot of things that go into the firm. how we're moving. We have really core seats in that. And they are showing a level of like, so we look at it from they're culturally exceptional, right? So they're hitting every core value consistently. They're not inconsistent in that. They are somebody that the firm looks to for leadership and advice. They are creating. So they're not just sitting in a place of executing, Joe, and just putting things to place. Like they're thinking through like, oh, if we implemented this or we create this strategy, it'll be really impactful to the firm. And you start to see that consistent behavior. And then a core component, certainly, you know, when we have our lead advisors running a large, like they truly own those relationships and those types of things over the years. We are certainly looking at that, but it's not just like you have a high level of client relationships and you become a partner. You really have to be thinking like a business owner, being innovative, being thoughtful and coming to it and creating IP for the firm beyond just you sitting in the seat of advice and relationship. That's been a good indicator. Our path to perform our partner, when we recognize that somebody's on that path, about 2 years out, we'll start inviting them into the partner meetings where they can sit in with the exception of any sort of comp conversations about other employees. But they can sit in and start reviewing what are we reviewing in partner meetings? What type of decisions are we making? You know, what's happening so that they can understand. And then at about a year prior to partnership, we'll start giving them access to finances and understanding. We'll help them start working through like, what are their abilities to buy in? So any sort of lending that they may need in order to purchase, start getting those applications in place, because the goal would be that when we set that date, that they're able to buy in on that date. Those are really important pieces. Getting lending in order to buy in is not the easiest thing. You need the business in a certain place. You need banks in a certain place. helping them understand personally, are they ready for that? And to be super honest, like we had somebody on that path and she was super excited about it. Life has shifted in a really big way where growing families, like shifts personally in, you know, significant other's role and job and all of those things. And she was like, I'm really on board. We don't know if we want to make this investment right now, you know, coming to the table.
A lot of phantom income that comes on that you don't ever see.
Totally coming on, putting that down payment in and then taking on that extra level of like, you know, note payment, like we might want to put that towards this type of house or another type of investment because we are both feeling, and those were really good conversations where she's like, I want to know that I still have that path. I'm just not on it currently because life has shifted. And it took a level of like understanding that like, it's just not a gift. And those are things that when people think of partnership, they love the title and the thought of it. But the truth is there's liabilities associated with it that maybe you're not ready for. Or we want them to experience working with Jared, Tim, Mabel, and I on like decision making. Like, how do you feel about how we're seeing the business? Are we people you want to partner with? You know, now that you, so you start with the people side, go to the money side, and then go with like, how do you personally need to finance that? We do feel like it's our role as partners to set up financing and what does that look like? So having vetted the banks and the opportunities and try to make that path as smooth as possible. But that seems to shift on an annual basis based on where banks are at and the ones available. And so do we do, you know, a level of like seller finance? How do we shift as valuations are going up, right? That's a big thing that we're facing right now. Valuations are really increasing. How do we make this continually accessible to our employees that we want on this path when you have more partners and we do an annual valuation and those continue to rise, even at a 30% lack of control discount, it's really hard to continue to want to encourage that path for everybody. So we're working through like everybody knows that that's the mission. How do we continue to make this accessible all along the way? And we know bigger firms are facing that as well because those multiples right now are no joke. So. And rates have also gone up. Yeah, the cost of buying in is crazy. So we have seller financed a couple of opportunities and that may be something that I don't know. That may end up being something that we have to continue to think about as a firm in order to create those opportunities.
I think SBA rates are north of 10%.
Yeah, it's wild. Anybody else on, yeah, building teams or thinking through partnership, Christian?
I was just wondering, how do you go about managing shared staff? So for my partner and I, we're a bit of a smaller team, but he's got this existing book that he brought in when he joined our firm of some smaller households that require a lot of work. So there's a bit of a difference in terms of, you know, client households I manage, client households he manages, but the revenue is still, there's not as big of a gap from a revenue standpoint. Just my household's a little bit larger than the ones he had on average. And we have a client service lead and a paraplanner. Paraplanner right now is on his dime. Client service leader is mostly on mine with a little bit of shared amounts for kind of office corporate work, we call. And we're looking to tweak that a little and give him a little more client service lead time, but I don't know how to manage that workload. Is it just, you know, we give him a day a week and that's how we do it? I'm just trying to find a good system that works because she handles all the processing, booking, and just trying to find a good system for sharing staff and how to manage their workload. So, you know, the priorities get done and she's not overloaded at the same time.
Yeah. Have you done any sort of time studies as to how she's already contributing to have a baseline or both team members as to where they're currently at and how they're contributing and to understand capacity available and to make those decisions?
We haven't done any kind of specific time studies. We do know she spends about a day a week on kind of the corporate office type work. And the rest of the time right now is spent with me. We only hired her less than a year ago. So, you know, she's starting to get to the point now where I can see she has some capacity because now she's got trained up. She's moving a little quicker through things. And that's why we're trying to split the time a little more because essentially I don't need 100% of her time anymore now that she's trained up.
Yeah.
And that's why we're trying to shift things.
That makes sense. I would say that the best way to do it is define what those needs are from both of you and utilizing her as a team. Make sure you're super clear on that and then put some level of hours towards that. Usually as owners, whatever hours you think you should double it, because it probably, we tend to think that things are done in a much faster timeframe than our team members are able to or effectively get it done. So if you think it's going to be 5 hours, make it 10, especially to start. And then kind of divvy it up that way. And you can just tell her, I feel like when we're in these moments of transitions, just being like, hey, we're going to give this a go. We really want your feedback along the way, right? Really create voice and opportunity there to be like, hey, this isn't going to work from a 4 hour perspective. It's going to be closer to 5, or it's going to take 2. There's going to be a little bit more opportunity here. What was next on that list that maybe I could take on? Those types of things have been the most fruitful in sharing that. But maintaining, especially in a shared comp model and it sounds like almost two different businesses utilizing and hiring to support staff, that'll start to grow. Cause it may be that your partner's like, ooh, I really like having this. Cause all of that stuff's below the line and want to continue to put pressure on that. And you're like, eek, that now puts us in a binding position and who now gets this employee. And so you want to have like as much clarity upfront on what your guys' needs are. How do you maintain that sharing? If there was ever an employee buyout, what does that look like? Because you are sharing that so that it doesn't set you guys up for failure and you're more set up for success. Those are the things that I've seen in shared staff along the way that you just want to be thoughtful about allowing her to have voice in this so that she doesn't burn out and she's feeling really good about just adapting and kind of being in a little bit of flux will be really important to the success as well. And then from there on out, just a level of time tracking or, you know, for her at the end of the week, each Friday or something to be like, hey, I was like 30% you 40, you know, and 70% the other way or vice versa on teams or like on these 5 core tasks, here's how my time was, and that'll keep you guys on track from like a, ooh, this is starting to get overwhelming or wow, that's a really big shift. You want to see those trends and try to hit them prior to any sort of burnout or any sort of disconnect. Is that helpful?
Yeah, it sounds like at the same time too, I think instead of, because just again, the household difference is a bit skewed. So maybe even not giving or devoting her to all of his households at the same time, say, okay, maybe we'll take a portion. Okay, these top clients will get CSA support. And then that way we're not allocating her time across the whole book. It's just, you know, here's my clients, here's kind of the clients he's allocated her time towards. And then from a household basis, I think it may make a little more sense. And then we can track and adjust as we go.
Yeah, you can always add to it and take it back. And consistency in that for your household and his household, like trying to keep a level of like her work maybe consistent across the two is helpful too. Because you just continue to add, you know, a lower household, like, hey, you can't spend more than 15 minutes with these households, because that becomes, you don't want to, her, you probably don't want to get there. So I do think that that tiering could be really helpful for you guys in determining each step there.
Awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. Kevin?
Can you give some more information on how you guys decided to transfer to more centralized workforce and size? So we're about 8 people right now, so we're not quite to where you guys are, but the centralization seems appealing. And is there a point where you kind of say, hey, I'm going to go ahead and do that, even though it might not be exactly right now, but in 2 more hires you're there?
Yeah, so I'm going to show you something because I feel like this visual has helped everyone as we've worked through our playbook on this. So we have like the 3 core areas that we look, and then we have the 12 like subset areas. And this is how we were like, okay, we're going to start growing in this way of centralization to create career pathing and opportunity and just all these things. But like our client advisory, we have 5 team members in this right now, but this is exactly where they're supposed to stay, right? And we have one of them that's like half here and half leading our technical planning, because we're just not in a place that we can have a full salary devoted to that. It's more of a luxury position in the centralization than it is having it as a need. And so those are things that you can start thinking through, Kevin, as you're thinking about where are we getting this leverage and the centralization. Right now, our system security person and all of our data, so she leads all of our tech, because we now have, I don't even know, 35, 40 tech systems. And, you know, you need all of those things to talk, and the team needs things and all of those things. And our talent culture, so she's like our employee experience. So she's really looking into, you know, stay interviews with our team. How are they feeling? Where are they at? How's performance reviews going? Do we have accountability in our project management? Those types of things. It's one seat right now. Our compliance is also back up to our account servicing. So she's a head of client ops outside of our seat there. So it's one of those things where moving into centralization, we were like, what if we could have the ideal firm to get consistent, predictable, and scale the way that we want to? What does that look like? Now, what is our current team members and how clear are they? Again, we had team members that felt like they were responsible for all of these categories at every given time, and they were just freezing. So we were like, great, you are client advice and technical planning. Investment management was centralized from the beginning because we have our CIO there. But then the account services was also like a secondary relationship and advice person. And that flip-flopping created a lot of inconsistency. We're like, what will create consistency? And we brought the team in. We're like, that's a great move. So instead of having one client operations underneath every one of our teams, we were able to take one person, remove some of the planning pieces, and just get them consistently in the client ops seat for all the teams. And it's like, there are our lead advisors, like, that is the best thing ever. It has created so much space for us just to be in front of the clients and get them responses and get them everything when we're not worried about every money movement piece and every account paperwork and the beneficiary updates and dealing with the custodian and doing all that stuff. It's been such a huge piece of capacity and growth. So we've been able to think through those types of things. Right now for growth, it's me and my marketing assistant. She's incredible, my executive assistant, who are leading all of these pieces right now. It's a lot for one person to sit in. I'm a partner of the firm and I'm highly incentivized to sit in the seat. And I love it. But over time, I'm like, great, I'm going to hire an onboarding specialist that goes right in here and works with me. But, you know, unless we have a predictable rate of onboarding that I'm already bringing in through our marketing efforts, they're also going to start to help me with lead gen, and we're going to have a balance there. And then they have the opportunity to move into onboarding. And then we've outsourced more of our brand and marketing, where it's like, that's a really important thing that we need. We probably don't ever need that in-house. There's going to be experts out there along the way. So who in-house is just going to manage that vendor relationship? Not a full-time role to manage the vendor relationship. So what does that look like? So that is how we kind of moved from like, hey, how are we there? How does everyone focus on 2 to 3 really key important things? And they do that really, really well. And that's going to get us to the $10 million revenue firm that we're looking to grow to, and do it at a place that gives us all, allows us all to feel really good and some fluctuation, right? Because investment management is doing really well right here. We can utilize levels of account service to do trade support or any sort of flexibility for him to take time off, those types of things. Over time, there's probably an analyst underneath him, right? And so how do we create that? Who do we already have internally? So what I love about the centralization is it gives career path flexibility while it's also creating a lot of scale and leverage for us. Is that helpful?
Yes, I've got 2 follow-up questions for you on that. First, did you have to rearrange people when you first decided we're going to go to centralization, and how did that go? And then secondly, how did you come up with these different areas? And, you know, here's the ones we need to prioritize, and you're priority one on this one, but you're the backup on this one. And like, how do you communicate that effectively to everybody, so everybody knows what's going on?
Yeah, really good question.
Who did talk to?
We had a couple of major role shifts. Like, so we had one that was, she's been with us for 20 years, or she's been in the industry for 20 years. She's been with us for about half of it. And she was in a second seat advisor role. And then we were moving her over to that client ops role consistently. It wasn't hard because we also really looked at, like, for her, she was like, that's my ideal role. And the compensation, if we had any sort of compensation gap where maybe we were overpaying somebody based off of the investment news metrics because of the position shift, we didn't decrease any of that. But what we did have is an open conversation about that, like, you know, that we're going to let that compensation catch up, because there's going to be cost of living adjustments and all of those things along the way. So it was really healthy conversation there. Outside of that, not really. I mean, I think the cool thing about having a team is you can see, like, okay, we have our 8 people, they're in their primary seats for the most part right now. What will be any of those major shifts? For our lead advisors, it was just a lot coming off of their plate, like not having to lead that technical planning, not having to also lead their team on all of the paperwork and having that come to them. So for them, they're like, this is just capacity. And it was a really great buy-in there. I would say what we call our coordinators, like our second seat advisors, they were kind of like, oh, but in that diamond model, there's that planning seat that then gets to go up. So they're like, it now feels like a really big career jump in order to get to that lead seat. And we need a level from the firm to grow in order to have that. So that was a tad bit of a conversation to be like, hey, this is what we understand your concerns. Here's why it's actually maybe a faster track or an opportunity here, because now you're not having to go in this. And it's quite a different seat to go from relationship and advice into technical planning into relationship and advice again. So how do we manage that along the way to get the leverage out of our team to really grow us that way? And so it ended up being positive in the end, but that was a big question. Identifying the gaps. So Jared, myself, and Tim in the firm, we took a look at, like, okay, we know we need operational leverage in order to scale. Not only that, but where are we unpredictable the most? Like, is it in, we have 3 teams leading client experience, and all of those leads are leading them differently. One looks at doing a financial plan this way. Another one's looking at doing it this way. Like, we need a level of consistency there, because as a firm, we're probably going to grow to have more of these teams. And if we don't have consistency, then we're just like, it is going to be a big problem. And so how do we start there? So that's where that technical planning piece and creating systems around that came into place. And then for growth, it was like, we really do want that. I want the leverage there, especially leading it. But at the end of the day, like, we don't need it as a firm currently. Like, I can manage it with an assistant really well. We may have to tame our goals to get into a place where we start having consistent growth, and then we can hire there. But that isn't like, that's way less disruptive to the overall team if we focus in on like operational leverage stuff first. And then the other question is like, do we need to hire this in-house, or can we have one person that's in a vendor relationship? So you see under like system specialists, like we have an outside managed service provider that helps us with like hardware and software breakdowns. And then we have like a cybersecurity audit every year. Like that's not something we're doing internally. Like we're hiring those out and have a team member associated with who leads those projects and ensures that that's coming through to our firm. Compliance, like we're not big enough that we necessarily need a full-time compliance officer. It's really helpful to have that internally, but like having that secondary seat of that client operation, she was already solving a lot of client ops. She loved that piece of it. So when we were looking at her, where it's like, do we have the need for, you know, compliance all day, every day, and only compliance? Like probably not. Firms our size usually average maybe 10 hours a month associated with like compliance needs, with the exception of audits. So like, if that's the case, then what does that look like as a position? Well, like that could have fallen anywhere if they were growth oriented, like we could have made that happen. They are incredible backup to our investment and our client ops. So it creates a lot of contingency there. That means if somebody's leaving on vacation or if something's out that we have, if somebody were to career change, we have that support. So we were trying to look at like, what are those failure points that would cost us big as a business? We're going to start there. What are the leverage points that are going to create the most opportunity? We're going to start there. And then where does growth allow us to then create ease and opportunity? Those will be the last things that we're focused on. So that's how we looked at it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Other questions?
Can you talk about when you have like an employee and there's not a growth path now, or like when you, how you would do that conversation?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We've just gotten super honest about it because we have previously paid the tuition of trying to not lose somebody awesome and just continue to tweak the business to support them when the business wasn't in a place to support them. So those are things that we're like, okay, like there are going to be times in business where you have really, really great people and the timing of the business is just not supporting them or like their growth internally. And we may end up losing that person. Ways in which you can keep them longer is having really great total comp package and having benefits that support them in the life that they want to live totally. That has certainly helped us along the way. And then just consistent communication and check in on like where the firm is so that it's never a surprise to them. So in all of our quarterly team buildings, we're going through our playbook that is measuring everything. They're seeing where our fees are being pulled, where new business, like new revenues coming in, where new revenues leaving, and all of those things to know like where the firm is so that they can kind of measure that along the way. But ultimately the firm has to be ready for that growth. Like we try to ensure that when we're hiring, we have as much of that path figured out as possible, that there are going to be those opportunities. And ensure that we're not just hiring for a short-term need in that moment so that it really can support that growth. However, there have just been moments where we didn't hit the growth marks, and that growth is the path. Like we just can't create those promotions if we don't have the number of new households, or we can't make that investment. And so that's just a super honest conversation to have along the way. But for the most part, if that opportunity is there, if you feel the predictable lines of growth are coming, if you're within that short-term time factor that you feel that you are able to create that with that person, then it's just a matter of clarity on that. Okay, we're not here today, but we think we're there in 6 months. Here's what you can do in those next 6 months that when we're there and we have that, like everybody is ready to pull the trigger. Here's what we need to see. Here's what we're going to need to develop and those types of things. And that's a really great conversation too. If we're not there in 6 months, then, you know, we can have those conversations, but people will be able to see it along the way. So like, what are your 2 month check-ins in that 6 month period? To say we're both on the right track, the firm's on the right track, you're on the right track, we're working towards it. So I think you want to be careful about the firm's just not there. If you think you're going to be there in a short term, if you truly just don't know if you're going to get there and somebody is super anxious in their career and they're pushing, that's awesome. Your job is to give them the information to make their decision for themselves. I said it in one of our chats, I believe that people should be loyal to themselves first. And I think the business needs to be loyal to the business first. That supports the teams in the best way and it supports people. Nobody owes each other any sort of other loyalty. Are you coming here on the daily basis? If you feel it's best for you in this given time frame to have this type of career and we can't offer it, honesty is the best option there and super transparent. So that's how I feel about it.
Is the issue usually there where they're wanting to move up and you don't have the place for them to move up to, or is it they just want to change role?
Right now it's the person's not at a space to move up. Like the skills aren't there, but it is like one of those where it's been time and designations, but it's not, everything's not to the level that we want to go to the next spot. And there isn't even a spot up there. So more of like going somewhere else, or how do we, you know, soft land with what's the next place for them?
I want to understand this. Alexa, is it like you want to keep them? They're doing well. There's just no, maybe like similar to like my marketing example earlier, where I'm like, we will never have a need for like a chief marketing officer because we have a chief growth officer. Like that just isn't going to be something that we need currently and probably for a very long time. Right. Or even a director that's calling strategy because we have that. Is it kind of like that where it's like, we may just not have a need for that next level, but we enjoy the level that it's at?
There are issues with the level right now.
Okay.
We like the person, and it's been like okay, but it's not what we want in the current role, and there's not a different role that it would work. Like, you know, maybe more investment stuff, but the same skills that we're missing in the CSA spot are what we need to take more there. So like, how do we start those conversations? Cause it's not like horrible, it doesn't work, but like, hey, it might be better suited at a Fidelity or at a big place where you know, we're working on growth and building. And if we do well, everyone does well, where it's more like, I checked the box, I did the thing, and it's a mindset of ownership, which like, how do we, like, we don't hate you, but it's not a match, or I think Samantha knows a little.
It makes sense. And we've been there. I think a couple of things. One, how disruptive is it to your culture? Do you need to take your medicine now versus later? Two, what are going to be the costs to, like, there's this level of where if it's toxic and hard to the culture, you need to let go immediately, right? Like, you take your medicine now. If there's this level of like, it's going to be disruptive to let him go right now, like, it would be better to kind of let us have an understanding more of the role, how we're going to move things. And then we can ultimately have that discussion. But number three, a way is just really getting clarifying. Like, I had that example in that marketing seat where she's like, I'm a director. And I'm like, but you're not. Like, here's where we see this. And here's truly where we're seeing you perform. We're going to give you a yellow here, a red here, a green here. We need all this to be green before we would move that forward. And so it's really, and there's performance improvement plans. If you're in that place, I would tell you that's usually the kickstart to, there's going to be, I think only 2 out of 10 end up ultimately coming up to it. So you're basically on a path of somebody leaving and most likely interviewing. So if you're doing a performance improvement plan, you want to be ready for that position to shift. But it's okay to just have that conversation. I mean, they're not serving you in the position that you're in now and that you need it. You're in a similar place to us. Something that we've had to learn as a firm is we've had people who've come from wirehouses. So they are like, we like to have a science to the work that we do. Like when I click on A, I needed to give me B, C, so I can go and do D, right? Like it just like, they love every system and all that stuff. And I'm like, hey, so we're a firm that's in more art than science. We're still kind of throwing the paint at the wall. The cool thing is you don't need a business plan and we're willing to break and refine anything on ideas and stuff. So if you want to be a part of that culture where you get to innovate and do that, that's awesome. It's going to be messy because not everything is super clear and defined, and it's not going to be handed on a silver platter. If you're looking for it to be wildly a math thing where all of that's in, we're looking to eventually get to a blend. We're not there yet. Then we're not going to be the place for you. You're going to be really miserable in our environment when you want the system to spit out exactly what you need it to, and you have the total support and technology is always working and all of those things. And that's been really helpful because we've had people who have like ended up self-identifying as like, I'm a science person and your firm is going to drive me crazy. And we have other people who are like, oh my gosh, I've been waiting for the opportunity to be a part of building something and creating it. And I feel excited about that. And I recognize that that means I'm going to have nights where it doesn't feel good because it's so messy to build. And that's been really helpful. But I think for this person, it sounds like they're probably just not ultimately a fit, because for us, we need everybody to be a high performer. We don't have space for low performers because we're counting on every position in such a big way. We're just not corporate. And so it means that when one person is not culturally aligned with that, it tends to drag pretty quickly and it tends to stand out. So it's probably the conversation as direct and as, you know, clear as you can be, like, hey, this is the role that we're looking, you know, this is the role that we really need or output from you. Here's where you're currently measuring at. Let's have a conversation. Let's start there and move it forward. If you're pretty clear, this is the full off board, I would pip it. I would performance improvement plan and move on out. Just start preparing yourselves for that transition. Anybody else have feedback there? Our people stuff can be so interesting. You feel the same way?
Sometimes it'd be great if everybody you hired had the exact skill set that you were looking for and could you know, jump in on that personality. Hey, it's not super clean right now, but you can help get it there. And sometimes we find that the skill set that they have is not a bad skill set. It's just where we are right now, it's not great. But if we look forward 2 steps down the road, we think their skill set might be really good in a specific position. So it's just a matter of us, do we grow to try to get them in a, you know, your quote of what's it, build the firm to serve the firm, not the individual. You said it really well. Sometimes it's just the timing, whereas the timing now is not good, but if I go forward a year, the timing might be a lot better. And could they fit that role? And that's just kind of a hit or miss. Do you want to kind of go with it for a year or not? And I think the other thing out is sometimes there's a skill set that if you really need that particular skill, you know, deep down that person's not going to ever have it, right? Versus, hey, they're close, a little more training, they could get there. And I think that's kind of there's sometimes where we're just like, hey, they're never going to have that skill set. And as much as we want them to, I have to realize that I can't help them get there because it's not going to be there.
Yeah. Joe, did you have something to add? Thank you, Kevin.
Sure, I don't know if that helped or not.
It's sort of the duality of Kevin. It's either you don't think they're going to be the right person, so don't keep dragging it out because it's going to be a mess for the whole team. Or if you're not like worried about P&L, and if it's Kevin's thought, is it a long lead item and you're going to try and mold them into something? But you know, at some point, you usually kind of know if you need to do it, and we all tend to wait too long.
Yeah, and be careful on those molds, just that, again, are you molding them to try to make it work for them or is it right for the business? And that's just such an important line that I've ultimately learned is like, we have done it more times than we can count on trying to make it work for the person, because it's people and it's hard, and ultimately they're okay. They're all going to be okay. Everybody's okay. And so just being really thoughtful about that, but molding the business to support the person when it's just not working, it's always wrong because you need that business. The business is supporting more than that person. It's supporting everybody there. And so it is really important that you're like, is this working for the business?
And as much as you can see them filling a role in a year from now, that role is probably going to completely change by the time you get to be a year from now.
Yeah. And so, and then it's just the formalities of it. You know, be thoughtful about the HR pieces, be thoughtful about the transparency. Don't feel like, you know, I've done this a few times, but oftentimes I'm like, I can open a lot of doors where I know that you would end up adding a lot of value, because I now see like where those skill set and those works are. And that has not been accepted several times. Like, people don't always feel good about it. And I'm like, okay, not for me to own. Like, as long as I can give them the information along the way to do it, like, my job isn't to now make it cushy and as safe and as awesome as possible. Like, you may do that and they still may despise you. And you may do it and they may love you. Like, that was the best thing that anyone could have ever done. You just don't know how it's going to happen for anybody. So, and be very clear. Yeah. Have your HR pieces buttoned up and just be, you know, as true to self and your values, and it'll all be okay.